Hey, Daniel. I'd say how's it going, but we just wrapped another call. So, what's new in the last 10 minutes?
As you can see, if you're watching an episode that I think actually comes out after this episode, I'll be wearing the same sweater. So hello, past me, future me, whatever it is. We are, yes, having a double feature today on the recording. I'm doing okay. We were saying we took a quick bio break between sessions, and I feel like I've been talking about having a puppy for the entirety of our podcast. I think when we started, I had just gotten a puppy, and it's got another puppy, so a second puppy, and they are 3 months old. They're very small, but they also needed to go outside. So, we're doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I did my quick run. I'm recording from my mom's house this week, so I had to let the dogs out really quick myself and remember that our Yorkie loves the farm so much that he will run and try to chase the horses and he will get trampled. So I had to go run him down really quick. But should we jump in? Because we started a little late in our recording today too, and I know our guest is probably eager to jump on.
Yeah, let's get started. Do we have a title for today? What are we talking about?
Oh, well, we're talking about revenue cycle education and development of programs and just education in general, both soft skills and not soft. We don't have a full title yet. Patty is making something in the works for us. So, it'll be something after. She wanted to take a listen to this episode herself first. So.
Cool. Yeah, I feel like we keep talking about using an AI bot. I need to figure out how those things work. I'm behind the times. But let's go ahead and get started. And we'll jump into our hot topic segment, introductions. I have our first and only introduction today. And this our guest today has worked for over a decade in various patient access and IT training roles and has a very strong background in training and development, project management, and performance. And before moving into her current role as the director of the Revenue Cycle Academy at Stanford Health, she worked at the University of Colorado Health. Thanks for joining us, Abby, today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
We're
As a
excited to have you.
personal,
Oh,
oh,
go
I was going to say, as
ahead.
a personal anecdote, my sister went to Stanford and received a lot of care at your health system. So it's really, really nice to meet someone who works there. It's fun.
Yeah, awesome. Hope it was good.
She says so.
Well, Abby, we're excited to have you on today for sure. And thanks for letting me edit your bio a little bit for the University of Colorado Health, because I know they also go by UC Health, and we have a lot of California listeners as well who also goes by UC Health. So
I know it's a tricky title because University of Colorado Health, they did shorten it. And so they are technically only UC Health,
yep.
but it has to be defined because there's so many others similar. So I appreciate it for sure.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's jump into today's hot topic, and we keep in the theme of education. We wanted to know, with Stanford, we know from Stanford being one of our Wilshire clients, and many of us have engaged there, myself included, in a different capacity of projects, being that remote and hybrid. How are you helping leaders expand that soft skill portion of education and keeping up on that?
Yeah, this has been a really interesting area for us to explore. Like since COVID, 80% of Stanford's revenue cycle went remote and they decided not to bring them back on site. So it's kind of brought up some unique challenges, but also some really unique opportunities for us to kind of give people the freedom to find their own path towards their skill development. While also, trying to give some guidance and some best practices in some of those areas. So since it's not easy for us to get everybody on site all the time, we have tried to create some, learning paths that align with our strategic initiatives or competencies that we're working to define as an organization. We're leaning on our talent development organization through HR too. They do some really cool courses for us and presentation skills and situational leadership. So we're trying to leverage their work with some of our own and create these paths forward. But a lot of it is self-driven because people, have to find their own time. So very, very much leaning into the micro learnings and the virtual opportunities that have come up since COVID hit.
Yeah, I feel like we also work remotely. And one of the things that I often find in like a remote, just like even working with like another health system, and they always just push e-learnings at me, like e-learnings, e-learnings, e-learnings. And e-learnings are fine, but it's cool if there's like other types of learning opportunities, whether it be like an online classroom or some sort of educator or whatnot. And just curious, like, have you worked with any business partners or leveraged other tools to push education for folks, for leaders and for your teams, and just like, what are people interested in?
Absolutely. One really cool partnership that we started about a year and a half ago was with a group called Emergenetics. They are a employee development program that uses personality assessments. So similar to maybe like Myers-Briggs, those types of things that people are maybe more familiar with. But Emergenetics uses seven attributes. They use four thinking preferences and three behaviors, and put people on like the spectrum of behaviors and then how they prefer to think. And it's interesting to me because it's a personality assessment, but it's really used for employee development and engagement. And that's how we've tried to leverage it in our space. So all of our leaders have taken the assessment. They've gone through the initial, like, learn about yourself and what your personality profile says about you. But now we're driving it into this space with Emergenetics. That's let's talk about how that shows up in your team dynamics and what skills you bring into your team and what you may need to rely on others to bring onto your team. And it's really building into this self-awareness, social awareness, and then the skill mapping that comes from that. So that has been a really cool area that we've gotten a lot of positive feedback and a lot of engagement in to create some high impact teams.
Abby, are you guys looking at making that part of your onboarding or your even potential candidate assessment? Because, I know from my past life, we used like StrengthFinder, for instance, at one of my organizations on the provider side. And we really wanted to have kind of a balanced team of strengths. So, not a t like, while it was a very much an analytical team, we needed to make sure we didn't have everybody just with analytical skills as their top strength, right? We needed those woos, we needed all of those different components. So
Absolutely.
we actually got HR to agree to let us have people do that personalysis assessment essentially, so that we could then go and say, okay, are they filling the void, or are they just going to be a similar replica of somebody else on the team, and where is that going to fall into play with that like strength component that we need that's missing?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a big conversation we're having is how far forward can we push this Emergenetics work that we're doing? Because that's one of the huge intentions is to create these well-rounded teams that have all of these pieces represented. So there are no gaps in the representation or the product that we put out from any given team. We're a little stuck at the like pre-employment piece of it, but what we've been trying to do as we roll it out and talk team dynamics especially is when we've got an opening, especially for a leadership position, we're looking at the leaders that they work most closely with, assessing their profiles and maybe what might be the best complement to those groups, and then crafting our interview questions to maybe highlight some of those strengths or those needs, especially, I'm all about behavioral interview questions. So we've tried to craft some of those behavioral interview questions to say if they answer it this way, it might point towards a preference in analytical or in social. And that's what we're looking for. So look for answers that sound like this, right? So kind of utilizing our knowledge of it and the language that it has given us as a team. To identify those potential candidates that will round us out nicely.
I like the complimentary aspect, maybe to take a little tangent down memory lane for myself. But when I went to college, they matched our roommates freshman year based on like personality. Like we had to take like a Myers-Briggs type test, and you get your roommate based on your Myers-Briggs results. And sometimes it works fabulously, sometimes it doesn't. But like in a workplace, like I work with someone 8 hours a day, depending on how closely we work, it's important to have some complementary skills or complementary personalities that work well. And that also sounds really fun. It's a little bit more engaging than just the e-learning that you forget about then in a couple hours or maybe shorter than that.
Maybe even less.
Do you have any other like final thoughts just to wrap us out in our hot topic segment regarding soft skill development and just feedback that you've heard from folks?
Just that it's increasingly important. I feel like when we started the conversations around revenue cycle education programs, they were very focused on hard skills. How do we make sure people have the tools and the knowledge to do the job? And there wasn't a whole lot of fluff in those conversations. But as we've progressed and grown this program, especially, we're starting to incorporate a lot more of that soft skill conversation in how can we layer in soft skills into the hard skill conversations that we're having, and what are the most important ones that we need to be building and bringing forward in our organizations. So just that it's increasingly important, and people should anticipate that and make plans to incorporate it wherever they can.
Well, perfect. On that, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Vine Medical serves a growing base of more than 800 active hospitals and health systems nationwide. Their best practices are hardwired through technology solutions proven to help hospitals achieve sustainable top performance. Their well-published results include improving financial performance, physician and staff alignment, patient experience, compliance, and patient safety and quality measures. Learn more at vynemedical.com. That's V-Y-N-E medical.com.
Claim Capital is a team of ex-Epic staff focused on preventing denials. Instead of showing what was denied, which is the standard for other solutions available today, Claim Capital pinpoints why claims are denied. By training machine learning models on an organization's claim and remittance data, Claim Capital can identify the causes of denials and recommend changes in EHR build or workflows to prevent them from happening in the future. With a completely HIPAA-compliant infrastructure, no software implementations, and a zero-risk pricing structure, organizations can quickly and safely recover lost revenue.
And we're back.
All right, so let's move into the debate section. In this segment, we always talk about various industry trends, out-of-the-box ideas, topics to get you thinking. And today, you know, Revenue Cycle Academy, for those that aren't familiar with that or familiar with that concept, well, hopefully you learned something today. Evan, you want to kick us off here?
Yeah, so we know that Stanford has been doing a great job with education. Our very own Patty was there for a duration of time helping do some research. I was on our project first. Little snippet to be able to like listen in and what other organizations are doing as well. But we really wanted to share, have you, Abby, share like what kind of, how did the Revenue Cycle Academy get born at Stanford, and what were kind of the driving forces behind it?
Absolutely. I think our story is not unique. I think a lot of organizations, especially that transitioned onto Epic, probably have a very similar story to our progression here. Stanford went live on Epic in 2010. And again, as is a common theme, Epic encourages their customers to kind of lump all of their system trainers under the Epic umbrella. And then those Epic trainers become very focused on Epic functionality, which is totally appropriate and much needed. But what it does a lot of the times is it gets pretty separated from the operational actual workflows and very focused on the functions. And so that creates a gap for a lot of our training departments. And, you know, for clinical teams, that's not as big of a problem because they've got a whole clinical education component that's like required and it can't live under the Epic umbrella. But for non-clinical areas and for revenue cycle, especially who is housed very much inside of Epic, but still has unique workflows that they have to adhere to operationally, that can be a little problematic. So that's what happened with Stanford when they went live in 2010. All of their trainers from Revenue Cycle were absorbed under the Epic training umbrella. Sometime around 2014, they really started feeling the burn of that gap between Epic functionality and operations. They did some Kaizen events, some improvement work, and identified that they needed revenue cycle educators or operational, especially on the front end. So this was a pretty heavy patient access, free access kind of initiative. So they created some education positions within those departments around 2014. And then eventually those positions grew to the point where it became beneficial to kind of lump them all together and bring them onto one team. So we took those people who were embedded in the operations of each of those departments and brought them onto one cohesive education team, which is kind of where I came into the picture and really growing this opportunity to expand outside of just the front end of the revenue cycle and help support a little bit further back into mid and back.
And one of the things that I think of when I think about like education is that there's always constant changes. And to your point, sometimes it's Epic and we're always talking about Epic and what Epic's rolling out. And there's now quarterly updates. So there's something new to learn every quarter. But there's also industry changes that are happening all the time. I mean, Evan and I just got off another podcast about price transparency. It's like there's stuff coming up in like a couple months on this stuff. And keeping up to date on like what are all the best practices or workflows, or I need to do this, that, and the other. And Epic training isn't always going to be encompassing of everything, which is what you just talked about. There's some gaps in people's knowledge. And I'm curious, how are you keeping both of those kind of different goalposts in mind when coming up with training plans?
Yeah, one of the unique challenges of this, like move on to a support services team from operations, is that we're straddling basically two different worlds right now, where we have worked really hard to build a very strong relationship with our Epic Education counterparts. Luckily at Stanford, they have divided their Epic Education team into like a revenue cycle and ambulatory and inpatient. And so we have a small team that works with the same learner population that we do, which has allowed us to stay very connected. So we've got, you know, weekly meetings where we're talking with them. We share tickets. So when people put in enhancement tickets into our system and they get reviewed and identified a need for education, we both get a ticket to assess that education, which gives us a very transparent playing field that we both come together then and review the tickets, talk about what the education needs are and who's going to take the lead on it. So that's kind of from the Epic perspective, we have grown that relationship and that level of collaboration a lot in the past year, even especially, and found this very cohesive way to work together with them. But then our foot is also in the operations as well. And we have kind of a new optimization group within our operations towers as well. And so they're constantly seeking out the best practices and the newest and best ways and the automation and all of those pieces. And so staying in line and in tune with the work they're bringing forward for revenue cycle at the same time as balancing the Epic needs as well has been a very interesting and very challenging component of staying on top of the education needs of our teams. But it all comes down to the communication and the processes that we have in place to check in with them regularly, get connected to their projects at the right time, and just stay transparent with all the work that's being done. So that has, I think that's really driven us forward into some really up-to-date and accurate and innovative education that we're bringing out.
Abby, what are you guys, how are you kicking off education for like a new hire right out of the gate? Does everybody have like a state beyond like the HR component? What's RevCycle doing just as you're starting to embrace and onboard new employees?
Absolutely. They start with Epic Education. And we, again, we stay very connected to what's being presented there. They do Epic Education actually just for some of our teams move back on site. So they're doing some in-person Epic Education to get some practice. And then they come to our team virtually. And we've got some very specific learning paths built out for the teams that we are currently supporting. So they come, they spend a lot of instructor-led time with us. They do some of those great e-learnings as well. And then they're handed off to their operational teams. And we're trying to handhold that process from a Revenue Cycle Academy perspective, in helping the creation of checklists that are documented in our learning management system, to ensure that the learner gets a consistent experience across the board. We know that they're getting the same Epic education and the same Revenue Cycle Academy education, but once we hand them back to operations, we want to make that process as clean and consistent as possible too. So we're doing that through checklists and check-ins, some knowledge and skill assessments that we provide report cards back to their leaders as well. So
What's that whole process look like? Is it is that their first week, their first 2 weeks of onboarding?
They come to Epic Education and to us in the first 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then they're handed back off. And then it varies by role what on-site support they need, but that usually lasts the 4 to 6 weeks from there. What we are actually in the process of kind of massaging a little bit in partnership with Epic Education is the fact that the learning that you need from our teams is not always needed in that first 2 weeks. We feel like we are jamming a lot of information into, as short of sessions as we possibly can. And that's kind of a disservice to the department and to the learner, right? Because we know there's, some crazy statistics out there that learners retain maybe about 20% of what they learn, especially the more information you provide, the less they retain. So we are looking very intentionally at what is the timing that we're presenting information and expanding out our new hire process into 30, 60, even 90 days in some of these roles to say, do you need to know how to register a workers' comp patient on day two? Probably not. So let's get you that information at a more appropriate time.
Yeah, I know at my last organization, one of my last organizations, they had, it's a smaller organization in the sense of leadership capacity, in that regards, but all three executive directors had to go and present at Revenue Cycle Academy 101. So there was an education team that developed it, but really the morning kickoff, and I'm giving everybody kind of like, hey, this is what you do, what the clinical providers do really does impact revenue cycle. And they built out a whole program that eventually was able to convert virtual, just about like how to do registration, things that are unique to Blue Cross, things that are unique to this. Like if you're a registration, you're going to come to day two and you have to go day one through three. But if you're, just a back end biller, you're only going to come to day one and two because we want you to know how to do coverage correction, but you don't need to come and do the how to interact with the patient soft skill component of the course and whatnot. But they intentionally also broke it up throughout the day to say, okay, we're taking an hour break, not just a half hour break. They really learned that from going back to Epic and seeing how they do adult learning, and giving that time. Thinking of revenue cycle though, across the continuum, I mean, revenue cycle spans from just what reports under the chief revenue cycle officer or senior vice president. How are you guys integrating education now to providers of those key things that are impacting them on revenue cycle? Because they kind of are that extension, that provider and that clinician.
They are. And that's it's like you're reading my FY24 goals right now. That's such a huge area that we're talking about. And in the patient financial experience in general is like what revenue cycle education and awareness is needed by providers, both in providing care to their patients, right? What information do we need to inform them of so that they can help their patients make valuable decisions, right? But also in their, quality and safety work, that they're constantly striving for those better outcomes. How does revenue cycle play into that for them as well? So it's kind of on these two different fronts that we're exploring some provider education. It's a very new idea in our sector, and we're still building our plans around it, but the same concept of it almost needs to be some just-in-time training, some small bites. Providers don't want to spend time in the classroom learning about Epic and what they need to do in Epic on the day to day. They definitely don't want to spend a lot of time learning about revenue cycle. So we're trying to find some really, quick hit, interesting videos, ways to get them the information that is impactful and relevant to them and make it digestible quickly so that they can connect with it and
I've always found that my providers always just want someone to like come to their clinic or their like wherever they're working, just be like, and here's how you do it. Like, they don't want to do a class, they don't want to do a learning. They're just like, send someone up and like just have them like walk me through it, which isn't always feasible, especially when everybody else is moving remote on the back end.
Right.
It's a little bit of a disconnect.
It's so true. They do love that elbow support.
I do
It's
love
not
that
easy to get.
Stanford, too, their revenue integrity team produces that newsletter. At least they used to. I don't know if they still are, that quarterly or monthly newsletter about like here's CMS updates, payer updates, alerts, things of that nature. So they are bite-sized like highlights for a provider too, or even for the business, the business managers within those like specialties to say, hey, you need to tell your providers about this portion of revenue cycle that's going to be impacted. That was really cool, at least when I
Absolutely.
was engaged at Stanford, watching and seeing that go out to them.
Yeah. It's a good relationship that Rev Integrity definitely built for us that we're trying to leverage into a few new spaces too.
I'll continue with one theme that we have going on in our podcast this season. We've been talking a lot about AI and automation and how that's really inserted itself into the revenue cycle. And I have a question here about like, what challenges are you facing? I'm curious if you are facing challenges at the start, but just like thinking about training and the communication about all these different changes, everybody's pushing, like everyone like wants the next AI solution or the next automation solution. Everybody talking about that. I'm curious, is that presenting problems for you in the work that you're doing?
Good question. It's presenting opportunities. I don't quite see them as challenges yet. but I can see, as long as we keep them on the horizon, we'll be good. The automation component, I mentioned that optimization team that we have growing at Stanford. That's a big drive for them. And so we're moving quickly into a lot of automation spaces and taking advantage of every opportunity that makes sense, right, for the organization. What that does for education is we have to be very agile. We are trying to maintain that high level of communication and stay on top of, the projects as they come up and the changes as they happen and just staying ahead of who needs to be communicated with and how do we get that communication out. That other piece of the revenue cycle, providers are impacted by it, but there are a lot of, front desk teams or other groups doing revenue cycle work that aren't under our purview. So that's one challenge that I feel like we're experiencing is we educate the people that we're aware of, but how do we make sure that this automation and these good changes, but are being communicated to the people who are most impacted by them? So that's kind of one area with the automation is that it's just coming hard and fast, and we just want to stay on top of it. But from like a learning and development perspective, the AI has given us so many tools to move faster and create more creative content in new and innovative spaces that like it's hard for me to see the negatives because there's so many positives coming to our team right now. I mean, it's cut work time for, developing a script by a tenth. Like it's amazing. So we're enjoying what we're exploring with AI and then just kind of riding the wave of automation as we can.
What is going back to your 2024 goals and 25 goals? I'm sure you're getting ready to start planning. Kind of what's the next evolution for Stanford's Academy?
My goal for Stanford's Academy all the time is world domination. I just want to provide education to everybody that is willing to take it from us. So, in that sense, we're continuing to build out programs to support the revenue cycle operations that are already in our purview, but also to, find those departments and those teams and those groups that are hungry for revenue cycle education and bring them on board with us as well. And at the same time, build out new programs, especially around this career development and the soft skill area, and just kind of continue to broaden our scope using those pieces that everybody needs and everybody values. They maybe just don't know that we have it to offer them yet.
Abby, are you teaming up with other organizations? I know, like University of California Health, for instance, they, for all five academic medical centers, they just teamed up with Northern California HFMA and did a CRCR boot camp. I know Oregon's teaming up with another enterprise group as well in Oregon, and they're going to be offering a CRC boot camp. It was kind of the buzz at Western Region Symposium and hearing kind of some of that, where health systems are now trying to team up with HFMA or NAHAM or NARI or other groups to be able to bring those certifications back to their organizations in more of a sprint type of approach, and then be able to show that value back to their, to that internal personal growth and development goals of like frontline staff members and leaders who might not know, they might not even know that they have those values out there for them, but, or how to actually execute getting it done.
Yeah, that's really cool. I hadn't heard those yet. That's a really great idea. What we have kind of cooking right now is we just connected with FinThrive, and they've got, you know, some more virtual or e-learning offerings of those. So we're trying to build out the learning paths and kind of, again, our recommended, like, here are some of those tools and resources. I'm hoping that once we get those mapped out a little clearer for our individual job roles, we'll be able to leverage some of those different connections and partnerships to take those to the next level.
Awesome. Yeah, I've seen some of their learnings. It's pretty cool what they're developing. So
yeah, definitely.
I've pushed that for my own team, using FinThrive and the training that they have, just for, they had a lot of offerings. Sorry, I'm staying on mute here because there is chaos ensuing downstairs with my dogs right now. And
oh, I just thought it was the elementary school next door.
That also true. I live across the street from an elementary school, but I don't try to comment on the chaos that they bring.
Oh, that's funny. With that, I the other thing that I was just thinking of, you know, California is so unique. I've seen other health systems starting to go out for like their Medicare or for their Medi-Cal team members as they're coming on board, and maybe they just moved from, like, you know, I don't know, Texas or someplace else over, and they're like, oh, now I'm going to be following up on Medi-Cal services, where they've actually gone out and said, oh, Medi-Cal offers all of this education on like claims and claims remittance and processing portion. They're going out and just grabbing, like, these are the top three videos that we recommend that's going to be part of your onboarding, instead of just saying, hey, go out. If you want to learn more about Medi-Cal, go out to their website. It's really like, here's that education that we recommend, and getting that adoption. Because I think sometimes, right, you can lead somebody to it, but unless you're spoon feeding them what you want, they're going to get overwhelmed and then back out of what that potential education offering is.
Yeah. And I feel guilty of that sometimes too, as we start exploring down these paths of, you know, FinThrive and what HFMA has to offer and NAHAM and all these different groups who have incredible offerings. But unless you have the time and the capacity, or, you know, a work group or people with the subject matter expertise to go and kind of curate your offerings, it's really overwhelming to ask any one person to go and just go check it out and see what there is, right? So that is, we have a learning management tower within our Revenue Cycle Academy, and that is one of the big tasks for them, is to help us curate this really intentional and impactful, like the e-learning offerings that are out there in the world, that we can say, hey, if you're in this role and you want to grow to this role, here are some of those recommended learnings and some things that the leaders have acknowledged are best practice for you to explore. Like you said, instead of just saying, well, go, you know, you've got access to FinThrive, go find the courses that resound with you, because that's not always the most impactful information for them to receive.
Are you guys,
I love that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Go ahead, Evan.
Oh, I was just going to say, are you, you know, we've had past episodes around education development with Tim from Wilshire and Marcy as well, who's our director of HR and people, talent and acquisition. And they really talked a lot about like career ladder development and things of that nature. Is the Revenue Cycle Academy there at Stanford building any of that in, and then looking, and then Future State going to look at like the FinThrive or other coursework to say, hey, you got to check these boxes to be able to move up, you know, like these are the things you need to check to be able to be prepared to move from like frontline staff to a lead to a supervisor, future managers, directors, etc.
Yep, absolutely. That's why I feel like we're in the early stages of that is, you know, using this career development foundation and especially that emergenetics work that I talked about earlier, to create that foundational and that common language, and then identifying the competencies needed at each role in our organization and giving people the tools and the map to grow from one area to the next. So there are some of our positions that are like laddered already by job description, but tying the education and the, you know, the experience components to that in a way that RCA can support it is definitely on our radar and an area we're excited to build into.
Well, I hope for our listeners that number of things stood out. And if you're involved in any sort of academy work at your organization or want to give feedback for yours, that there's some takeaways from what Stanford's doing. I know one thing that stood out to me is I love the idea of like expanding out the timeline for learning and not just like pushing in the 2 weeks, but thinking about like, what's the timeline for when do I need to know when to do something? I started at Epic, and one of the things I really liked about Epic is like, you had all these trainings you need to do, but it was like, you don't have to get it done to like 6 months in. And like, the idea is like, there is all this stuff you need to do, but do you really need to know it day one or day two or day three? And a little bit of like an opportunity to like piecemeal your own, like there's a direction of what I need to do, but the timeline for it is a little flexible. And I'm curious, just like Abby, if you have any thoughts on last piece of advice for listeners who are wanting to develop academy, like what would be like the last or most important piece of advice for them?
Absolutely. That's, first of all, do it. If you guys are thinking about it, if you see the need, if you see the gap, then start building the program. And my best piece of advice, I think, is just start where you are and find what resources already exist in two different capacities. What I have found at both organizations that I help develop these programs around is that there's always an informal trainer in a department who has like a Bible of resources that everybody knows to go and talk to that person and get their resources from them. That's the start of your training program. And it's already pretty well mapped, right? So that's number one, operationally find that person and leverage them. And if you can steal them and put them on your education team, do that too. And then piece number two is go out and find those external resources too, right? And start curating from HFMA, from FinThrive, from LinkedIn Learning, from wherever you have access to resources. A lot of revenue cycle language is common language, and there is a huge amount of foundational information that can be shared. I think what I experienced in my development in these programs is that you have Epic Education. We had Epic Education. So you have your like system education, and then you've got your operational information, and there's that gap. But some of that gap can be filled with more general information that can be accessed and doesn't have to be built from the ground up. But what a lot of organizations do is they start at that operational side and they work back down to the Epic side, and they miss that opportunity to leverage existing, and they create it all from scratch. So by doing that kind of audit first of what exists in your department, what exists out there that will work for you, and marrying those two things together, you have the opportunity to create a very comprehensive program without as much of the heavy lifting that needs to come.
That's awesome. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
There are thousands of medical offices and facilities across America. each navigating through changing regulations and reimbursement models while striving for positive patient experiences and outcomes. A common element in each of these facilities is patient access, the front line of both the revenue cycle and the patient experience. Though diverse in facility size and geography, patient access professionals unite around a common purpose, enhancing the overall patient experience to increase patient satisfaction and outcomes. Through it all, one organization is there to educate, connect, inform, and pave the way toward the future of patient access. The National Association of Healthcare Access Management recognizes the changing role of patient access professionals and their increased importance.
Are you ready to unlock the full potential of your medical coding team? Look no further than Adeo Technologies, the leading provider of medical coding productivity solutions. With Adeo's Gemini Solution Suite, medical coders are empowered and complemented with cutting-edge tools and technologies. The Gemini Coder platform, Gemini AutoCode, and Gemini Coding Assist solutions work seamlessly together, creating efficiency and improving accuracy in medical coding. Say goodbye to tedious manual processes, cheat sheets, and memorization, and embrace the power of workflow improvements, artificial intelligence, and predictive coding. At Adeo, we believe in the collaboration between medical coders and artificial intelligence to create coding capacity that makes human coders more valuable to their healthcare organizations. Visit our website at www.adeo-tech.com. It's adeo-tech.com to learn why we love coders and how Adeo Technologies is transforming medical coding productivity one claim at a time.
And we're back.
All right, so let's transition to the Wilshire Lab. Abby, I'm curious, what drove you to work in the healthcare industry?
That is a good question. I always knew that I wanted to work in healthcare. When I was young, I thought that I like wanted to be more patient care focused. You know, the human body was always really fascinating to me. I really liked helping people and that idea of helping people in such a like potent way really spoke to me a lot. I grew up a dancer. So like the body and injuries that I had growing up, all kind of led me to this idea that I wanted to be like a physical therapist or a nurse or something like that. And I got a job at the hospital in patient access. So working like the front desk. And I'm so glad I did that before I invested in too much schooling, because I realized that like the hands-on patient care was not my jam. But I really liked being a part of it. And, you know, and so revenue cycle ended up being a really nice fit for me and got to grow and impact the patient and the organization in a very unexpected way.
So being an early careerist in that role, or, you know, somebody who maybe converted from a different area of health, healthcare, or maybe even just different industry, what's one piece of advice you wish somebody would have offered you?
Right now, the piece of advice that I offer every early career, you know, person that I come in contact with is to build skills in two major areas. And that is emotional intelligence. So the more you can know about your own emotional tendencies and recognize the emotional tendencies of other people, the more successful you will be. I just across the board, it's a skill set that everybody should be building out. The second area is project management. So a little bit more of a hard skill, but we are in such a project-based business paradigm right now that if you have a basic functioning knowledge of project management skills and their application, you can apply them in any role and be seen as a very impactful contributor. So between those two things, I think that can help anyone escalate and promote to the next level.
We just had a podcast with Heather, and she was mentioning that it's really nice when you have a project manager, and operations should not be a project manager, but like it is so often that you are the project manager just because yes. Either no one's assigned or just you got to do it. So I appreciate that. Thanks, Abby, for joining us today to chat about education and what y'all are doing over at Stanford for the Revenue Cycle Academy. For folks who want to reach out to you, talk, maybe they have questions about today's podcast or just want to connect, what's the best way to connect with you?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Abby Bame, B as in boy, E-H-M as in Mary. I'm there a lot. Or feel free to email me, abame@stanfordhealthcare.org.
All right. Well, Daniel and Abby, that's it for us today. Listeners, we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
If you liked today's episode, continue to join Wilshire Wednesdays.
You can follow us on LinkedIn or Twitter at @Evan_Wilshire. Daniel can be followed at Daniel_TWG. Wilshire Group at TWG Health. On Facebook at The Wilshire Group. Or on Instagram at Wilshire IT Revcast.
Remember, if you prefer to watch, come check us out at The Wilshire IT Revcast YouTube channel.
If you have an inquiry, want to share your thoughts, or get additional information on today's episode, email us at WilshirePodcast@TheWilshireGroup.com.
The best way to support this podcast is to review, rate, and subscribe. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
The Wilshire IT Revcast is hosted, produced, and engineered by Evan Martin and Daniel Bianchini. It is executive produced by Gretchen Case, Hank Smither, and Spencer Thielman. The Wilshire Group. Experience you can trust. Results you can count on.